dealing with dissonance. Now is the time for open, critical, and mediated reflection on remote teaching and learning. The necessary pandemic-enforced modifications that teachers and lecturers made over the last year have often been nothing short of miraculous. Most frustrating, perhaps, is where effort has been huge, but responses, either engagement levels or evaluation responses, have been less than hoped for. I've heard colleagues desperate for a return to normal, and others very keen to hold on to and develop approaches they have honed or learned from scratch. Whatever teaching, learning, and assessment look like next year, there will be no doubt degrees of blendedness, hybridity, and necessary flexibility. Whatever our disciplines, it makes sense to take a moment to reflect on the experiences of the year and to consider what worked, what didn't, what we want to keep, what we have to keep, and what that means for our workloads and impacts on our own and our students' mental health. I originally typed well-being, but I'm starting to feel as though this word is being stripped of tangible meaning and weight. Anyway, so far, so obvious. One of the things that's become clear over my years working in teacher and lecturer development is that reflection as a process is not necessarily something that happens naturally for us all. And even where reflection is happening, we can find ourselves, for so many reasons, not modifying our behaviours and approaches. If we're going to properly address the issues in the paragraph above, in context, it may be that we need time and perhaps some form of mediated dialogue to push reflection. As part of that, we need to open ourselves to candid and perhaps even difficult challenges to our thinking. One way we can do this is to see how far we can as individuals or collectively as members of a department, faculty, institution, or disciplinary tribe may be subject to cognitive dissonance and immobile thinking. Without being immersed too deeply in the psychology, I'm leaning on the language of cognitive dissonance, Festinger 1957, and the fixed and growth mindset conceptualization of Carol Dweck. Cognitive dissonance is anxiety caused by our behaviors that challenge what is known. For teachers, a belief in the self and what constitutes effective teaching is important. Forced compliance behavior is the most useful way, I think, to think about this in the COVID context, because the vast majority of lecturers and teachers have had to act in ways that conflict with beliefs and preconceptions about what equates to good teaching and what shapes us, what defines us as teachers. Pre-pandemic, digital education could be ignored and the research dismissed where there was no perceived need or obligation to engage. Clumsy edicts without clear rationalization or evidence and behavioristic award systems for degrees of compliance have often led to cynical compliance or overt resistance. Witness the frustratingly frequent phenomena of VLE scrolls of doom and too oft repeated references to death by PowerPoint. When COVID hit and the emergency response morphed into something much longer, there was an inevitable and essential upskilling and mode switching. But these pre-existing tensions framed persistent deficit narratives. When enforced, those most resistant and fearful are most likely to be subject to confirmation biases. And this is completely normal and understandable, but also anxiety-inducing and ultimately a barrier. Dweck's notions of fixed and growth mindsets are useful ways of framing this, especially if mindset is expanded to include departmental or institutional cultures. Like many, I champion compassion as a driver, and for it to be at the forefront of our pedagogy in terms of the way we interacted and supported students, as well as centering care in expectations and sensitivities around how we work with colleagues. I don't want colleagues to be anxious. According to Festinger, to resolve the anxiety and stagnation, something needs to change. Beliefs and or actions. The pandemic forced us to change our actions. But how much time have we fully embraced the wisdom of research, the learning text, the instructional designers, rather than ploughing on with what is most familiar or a replica of that? And in terms of beliefs, how much have we built in time for mediated reflection that can reframe negative experiences in our actions? Do we understand why some activities are more likely to work than others? Are our individual and collective minds open to the difficult questions of what scholarship and experts say, weighted against our intuitions? I've witnessed how the two big aspects of HE pedagogic conservatism, lectures and examinations, have been challenged. In some ways, their persistence as defaults in the context of a huge library of pedagogic scholarship can be framed as an example of collective cognitive dissonance. I felt that those that missed, craved the lecture most were often those that suffered most, not because of an ability or kit differential, but because of how wrapped in their identities the lectures are, teaching as performance. It's fascinating to witness how quickly debates about the future of lectures, for example, have become something of a false dichotomy, framed as your way is just fusty, boring lectures versus you want to throw the brilliant lecture baby out with the pedagogic bathwater. This lack of nuance and this doubling down may be seen as a reflection of the populist zeitgeist. But are we not supposed to be centres of research, debate and critical engagement? We need time and mediation and space for openness to explore disciplinary specific understandings, needs and possibilities. We can't get everyone to change and shouldn't force people to change. But in the clamour to get back to normal, we're in danger of conflating the affordance of digital education more broadly with the experiences of 2021. What I'm saying here is as much about cultural or cultures and leadership as it is about individual examples of cognitive dissonance. Whilst this is a challenge for colleagues to think critically about their work and thinking, this is not meant to be read as a critique of that work. So for people in my sort of role, we have a delicate job. I do not want to be seen to accuse anyone of closed-mindedness, entrenched thinking, or suffering from confirmation bias. But that shouldn't stop me from trying to push challenging conversations. So how do I engage colleagues without the arms folding, though? In my view, those that are at the centre should be for provoking and mediating discussions and debate around these issues, prepared to challenge the intuitive discourses. Whilst I do not have the gift of time to offer, this is still one of my goals this coming year, and I want to take as many people as I can with me. I believe that cognitive dissonance is a useful vehicle for considering how powerful our mindsets are. And opening this particular reflective doorway may be one way to start reconciling what has been a manic 2020.